Burn. The American base at Cavite, along the shore of Manila Bay, burns real good once the Nips have set it on fire. Bobby Shafto and the rest of the 4th Marines get a good long look at it as they cruise by, sneaking out of Manila like thieves in the night. He has never felt more personally disgraced in his life, and the same thing goes for the other Marines. The Nips have already landed in Malaya and are headed for Singapore like a runaway train. They are besieging Guam and Wake and Hong Kong and God knows what else, and it should be obvious to anyone that they are going to hit the Philippines next. Seems like a regiment of hardened China Marines might actually come in handy around here. But MacArthur seems to think he can defend Luzon all by himself, standing on the walls of Intermoros with his Colt 45. So they are shipping out. They have no idea where to. Most of them would rather hit the beaches of Nippon itself than stay here in army territory. The night the war began, Bobby Shafto had first gotten Glory back into the bosom of her family. The Altamiras live in the neighborhood of Malate, a couple of miles south of Intermoros, and not too far from the place where Shafto had just had his half-hour of glory along the seawall. The city has gone mad, and it's impossible to get a car. Sailors, Marines, and soldiers are spewing from bars, nightclubs, and ballrooms, and commandeering taxis in groups of 4 and 6. It's as crazy as Shanghai on Saturday night, like the war's already here. Shafto ends up carrying Glory halfway home, because her shoes aren't made for walking. The family Altamira is vast enough to constitute an ethnic group unto itself, and all of them live in the same building, practically in the same room. Once or twice, Glory had begun to explain to Bobby Shafto how they are all related. Now, there are many Shaftos, mostly in Tennessee, but the Shafto family tree still fits on a cross-stitch sampler. The family Shafto is to the Altamira clan as a single alienated sapling is to a jungle. Filipino families, in addition to being gigantic and Catholic, are massively cross-linked by godparent-godchild relationships, like lianas stretched from branch to branch and tree to tree. If asked, Glory is happy, even eager, to talk for 6 hours nonstop about how the Altamiras are related to one another, and that is just to give a general overview. Shafto's brain always shuts off after the first 30 seconds. He gets her to the apartment, which is usually in a state of hysterical uproar, even when the nation is not under military assault by the Empire of Nippon. Despite this, the appearance of Glory shortly after the outbreak of war, born in the arms of a United States Marine, is received by the Altamiras in much the same way as if Christ were to materialize in the center of their living room with the Virgin Mary slung over his back. All around him, middle-aged women are thudding down onto their knees, as if the place had just been mustard gassed. But they are just doing it to shout hallelujah. Glory alights nimbly upon her high heels, tears exploring the exceptional geometry of her cheeks, and kisses everyone in the entire clan. All of the kids are wide awake, though it is 3 in the morning. Shafto happens to catch the eye of a squad of boys, aged maybe 3 to 10, all brandishing wooden rifles and swords. They are all staring at Bobby Shafto, resplendent in his uniform, and they are perfectly thunderstruck. He could throw a baseball into the mouth of each one from across the room. In his peripheral vision, he sees a middle-aged woman who is related to Glory by some impossibly complex chain of relationships, and who already has one of Glory's lipstick marks on her cheek, vectoring toward him on a collision course, grimly determined to kiss him. He knows that he must get out of this place now, or he will never leave it. So, ignoring the woman and holding the gaze of those stunned boys, he rises to attention and snaps out a perfect salute. The boys salute back, raggedly but with fantastic bravado. Bobby Shafto turns on his heel and marches out of the room, moving like a bayonet thrust. He reckons that he will come back to Malate tomorrow when things are calmer and check up on Glory and the rest of the Altamiras. He does not see her again. He reports back to his ship and is not granted any more shore leave. He does manage to have a conversation with Uncle Jack, who pulls up alongside in a small motorboat, long enough for them to shout a few sentences back and forth. Uncle Jack is the last of the Manila Shaftos, a branch of the family spawned by Nimrod Shafto of the Tennessee Volunteers. Nimrod took a bullet in his right arm somewhere around Quingua, courtesy of some rebellious Filipino rifleman. Recovering in a Manila hospital, old Nimrod, or Lefty as he was called by that point, decided that he liked the pluck of these Filipino men, in order to kill whom a whole new class of ridiculously powerful sidearm, the Colt 45, had to be invented. Not only that, he liked the looks of their women. Promptly discharged from the service, he found that full disability pay would go a long way on the local economy. He set up an export business along the Pasig riverfront, married a half-Spanish woman, and sired a son, Jack, and two daughters. The daughters ended up in the States, back in the Tennessee mountains that have been the ancestral wellspring of all Shaftos ever since they broke out of the indentured servitude racket back in the 1700s. Jack stayed in Manila and inherited Nimrod's business, but never married. By Manila standards, he makes a decent amount of money. He has always been an odd combination of salty waterfront trader and perfumed dandy. He and Mr. Pasquale have been in business together forever, which is how Bobby Shafto knows Mr. Pasquale and which is how he originally met Glory. When Bobby Shafto repeats the latest rumors, Uncle Jack's face collapses. No one hereabouts is willing to face the fact that they are about to be besieged by Nips. His next words ought to be, "Shit then, I'm getting the hell out of here. I'll send you a postcard from Australia." But instead, he says something like, "I'll come by in a few days to check up on you." Bobby Shafto bites his tongue and does not say what he's thinking, which is that he is a Marine and he is on a ship, and this is a war, and Marines on ships in wars are not known for staying put. He just stands there and watches as Uncle Jack putts away on his little boat, turning back every so often to wave at him with his fine Panama hat. The sailors around Bobby Shafto watch with amusement and a bit of admiration. The waterfront is churning insanely as every piece of military gear that's not set in concrete gets thrown onto ships and sent to Bataan or Corregidor, and Uncle Jack, standing upright in his boat, in his good cream-colored suit and Panama hat, weaves through the traffic with aplomb. Bobby Shafto watches him until he disappears around the bend into the Pasig River, knowing that he is probably the last member of his family who will ever see Uncle Jack alive. Despite all of those premonitions, he's surprised when they ship out after only a few days of war, pulling out of their slip in the middle of the night without any of the traditional farewell ceremonies. Manila is supposedly lousy with Nip spies, and there's nothing the Nips would like better than to sink a transport ship stuffed with experienced Marines. Manila disappears behind them into the darkness. The awareness that he hasn't seen Glory since that night is like a slow, hot dentist's drill. He wonders how she's doing. Maybe, once the war settles down a little bit and the battle lines firm up, he can figure out a way to get stationed in this part of the world. MacArthur's a tough old bastard who will put up a hell of a fight when the Nips come. And even if the Philippines fall, FDR won't let them remain in enemy hands for very long. With any luck, inside of 6 months, Bobby Shafto will be marching up Manila's Taft Avenue in full dress uniform, behind a Marine band, perhaps nursing a minor war wound or two. The parade will come to a section of the avenue that is lined, for a distance of about a mile, with Altamiras. About halfway along, the crowd will part, and Glory will run out and jump into his arms and smother him with kisses. He'll carry the girl straight up the steps of some nice little church where a priest in a white cassock is waiting with a big grin on his face. That dream image dissolves in a mushroom cloud of orange fire rising up from the American base at Cavite. The place has been burning all day, and another fuel dump has just gone up. He can feel the heat on his face from miles away. Bobby Shafto is on the deck of the ship, all bundled up in a life vest in case they get torpedoed. He takes advantage of the flaring light to look down a long line of other Marines in life vests, staring at the flame with stunned expressions on their tired, sweaty faces. Manila is only half an hour behind them, but it might as well be a million miles away. He remembers Nanjing and what the Nips did there. What happened to the women? Once, long ago, there was a city named Manila. There was a girl there. Her face and name are best forgotten. Bobby Shafto starts forgetting just as fast as he can.